Bandwidth for Inside the Net is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is Inside the Net with Amber MacArthur, episode 27 for the 4th of July, 2006. Doug Serine and Kent Nichols of Ask a Ninja. Amber MacArthur is on vacation because recently as Saturday, it was Canada Day. And so she
celebrated. Sure was.
Do you anything for 4th of July at all?
Nothing for 4th of July. I'm sorry, Leo.
I set up a sparkler
Canada
for
Day.
I set up a sparkler for Canada Day.
Did you? Yeah. Wow, that's good thing. So I'll have to set up a sparkler for you for 4th of July
just
as well.
Think about an explosion. That's enough.
I usually come to Prince Edward Island every Canada Day because they have a 3-day concert here called the Festival of Lights, where they have really amazing bands playing. So I always try to make it down, and it's kind of the best weather of the summer.
Oh, I bet. I bet it's gorgeous. So who did you see this weekend?
This weekend, I saw a band called Theory of a Dead Man from Vancouver, who are really, really great. And they were on my plane on the way down, which was kind of fun. Oh, and they're big Mac fans. Oh, I have a great little story I have to tell you. I was carrying my new MacBook, and one of the guys from the band came up to me, and he said, you know, he started talking to me about Macs and how he loves Macs. And he said, you know, I love them so much that I have a gold tooth that has an Apple logo on it. And I said, no way, that's impossible. I don't believe you. Let me see it. So I actually saw it, and he's sending me a photo of it. It's way back in his mouth, and it's a tiny little Apple logo on a complete gold tooth.
That's just hardcore.
That's really hardcore. So,
I've heard of people doing that for like the Oakland Raiders, but never for Macintosh.
I know, a rock band. You wouldn't expect it, but it was kind of neat. So we had a fun conversation, and then I also saw 3 Days Grace as well.
Oh, how fun! You love music.
It's fun.
I think that's something people don't know about you, but you are a music fanatic.
Yeah, I definitely love music. So I love going out to see live bands. I recently saw a band called The Deers in Toronto, which are really good. And anytime there's live music, I try to. I saw The Tragically Hip a while ago in Toronto, maybe 2 weeks. So that was a great band.
Are they still together?
They're still together.
They've been around a long time. I have one of their, a best of that somebody gave me. I guess they're the quintessential Canadian band.
Yeah, they really are. They're a great Canadian band. They have been around for a really long time, and they've been a hit in Canada, but didn't really penetrate too much in the U.S. for some reason.
Which is surprising. I mean, some of our best music is Canadian music. I mean, it's the Canadian artists do very well in the States, it seems like.
Yeah, it seems as though a lot of them do. I mean, especially Bare Naked Ladies. They've been huge in the U.S., and they kind of started out sort of almost at the same level, I think, as the Tragically Hip in terms of being kind of a Canadian band, but the Bare Naked Ladies seem to have kind of made it in the U.S. where the Tragically Hip isn't as popular.
Yeah, that's too
bad. Yeah, but they have such a huge audience here, I don't think it matters.
And they're doing fine. Well, we kind of got off of this track, but really I think it's good for us to enjoy our everyday lives because we're about to be slaughtered.
Yes, this is the end of us as you've known us. We're about to get killed.
By the ninja! He is here.
By the ninja.
Yeah. Can we say his name? I don't know if he is the ninja, actually. We're going to talk to Kent Nichols, who is part of Ask a Ninja. But if you ask, well, we'll ask him, shall we? Are you the ninja?
Yeah, let's ask him.
I work very closely with the ninja with my partner Douglas Serine.
Who wears the suit? Who does the voice? Come on, tell us, Ken.
Wait. No, wait. Here comes the ninja right now.
Sometimes I'll just appear out of nowhere. What's going on?
Oh boy.
I got cut. I'm bleeding.
I think I'd rather. I think I want Kent back, yeah. Leo. I'm not a fan of the.
Hey, no,
of this
no, Kent's still
guy.
Here. Kent's still here.
I'm right next to Kent. I've got a katana sword right next to his throat.
Yeah, please be gentle. Like I don't want to die.
I'm so sweating, and I'm like quite a few thousand miles away.
Oh, doesn't matter. I can move quick. Now I'm behind you. Now I'm not. I'm that quick.
Oh boy! This is getting crazy.
For those who don't know, I'm sure there aren't very many. Of course, it's a fantastic video podcast, and really now it's become a production company because you have a new podcast, Hope is Emo. Tell us how you got started, Ken.
You know, we started. Douglas and I, we started working together like 6 years ago at the Second City Training Center here in Los Angeles, and you know, we really kind of respected each other and liked what we were doing. 3 years ago, we won the International 48-Hour Film Project with our film Baggage, and I just want to mention
that because that's a very cool project. You have 48 hours to make a film.
Yeah, so you have to 48 hours. Like they give you the genre, they give you a line of dialogue, a character, and a prop that you have to do.
And the reason they do that is so that you can't prepare ahead of time. You have to write that script then.
Absolutely. And so it was our like training in improvisational theater at the Second City that really gave us an insight of how to do it. So we brought together like 21 of our friends. Douglas was like the primary writer. I was the producer director, and like, we just came up with a lot of different circumstances. And and our prop was a big suitcase. And so we wrote a screenplay called Baggage. You know, it was about a woman who keeps all of her ex-lovers in a suitcase under her bed. And but it was really funny. It was a cute romantic comedy.
That seemed to really strike a chord with Amber.
She's got her boyfriends under her bed. Absolutely.
Whoa. Whoa.
In a box.
Whoa, who said anything about boyfriends? Just random people.
Hello.
Now, the Screensavers competed in that 1 year. I don't know if that was the year that you were in it. We actually covered
I think it was, actually. We met a few of those people at Austin, they competed in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And, that was the year we won, like, the whole kit and caboodle.
That's really a significant achievement. I think. I mean, it's a very competitive event.
Oh, absolutely. And that was the first year they went international. And, it was just like, so Douglas and I looked at each other and we're like, gosh, you know, when we work together, some cool things happen. And, you know, we tell some really compelling stories. And so, we kind of looked around and, tried to keep working together and did some more short films. And then... Now we started working on this. We came upon this idea of these like suburban ninjas, and we were working on that script for a while for an online, content people. And then animation is so slow, and we didn't know what we were doing, and we were completely underfunded, and so it was really depressing to us. And Doug kept going, is there just a way that we can do this for no money every week somehow? And like, I was like, I don't know. And then finally I came up with, hey, we should ask a ninja,
And he literally just said, hey, come on over and we're going to do this thing.
And then you started?
And that was as far as I knew into it.
Yeah, and so we had a couple questions from people that, from an online community that, I got them to send in from my friends list. And we just picked like 5 or 10 of the best ones, and we picked one to just run with. And it was, we didn't know what we were doing. We didn't know how we were doing it. But it was just like, all right, we're creative people, and, we should be able to... figure something out and just let it grow. And so that's what we did. We answered the first question, and then we got that out before Thanksgiving of last year.
What was the first question?
Is there a Ninja Mart store? Like, where do you get your uniforms? Where do you buy your uniforms? And so the first one was titled Ninja Mart Store, and it's just like, no, there is no Ninja Mart Store. You can't just buy stuff like that.
Given your background in improv, I imagine this is all improvised. Yeah, you don't script it.
Oh no. It depends. Like, so sometimes we'll be very improvisational, but we always start from a writerly perspective of like, where are we going with this? What are the points? And then. you know, sometimes Doug will come in with something very written out, and then we'll go from there. And but sometimes like that may just be the seed, and it's like, okay, well, what's the focus? Like, how does this fit into, you know, a 3-point structure? You know, how does it, you know, grow and devolve away from what that original point was?
It's interesting. You mentioned that in Twit that you really have an arc. But it feels very spontaneous and improvised as well.
Well, some of it is very spontaneous. For instance, like the net neutrality video was just Kent explaining net neutrality to the ninja, and then the ninja trying to explain it back to him. Like, it literally was, there was literally nothing written on it. He just said, the ninja said, "What is net neutrality?" Kent explained it to him, and then he tried to explain it back to Kent. And that's what
Are we
came
talking
out.
To the ninja now? I'm kind of confused, Leo. Are you confused?
I think this is Doug. I don't know. The ninja may not.
That was Doug. Doug. Like, the ninja went away for a little bit.
This is Douglas. I don't know where the ninja is. My goodness.
You never know.
He's got a lot of things to do.
I'm trying to talk directly to the ninja, but that's okay. I understand. He can't always be on air.
Interviews, really.
No, he really doesn't. You know, he's a bit of a skittish fellow. He's a ninja.
Sometimes they just show up out of nowhere.
There he is. I have to say, his grasp of net neutrality was, in fact, superior to Ted Stevens of the Telecommunications Committee.
Oh, yeah, I know. I saw that. Yeah, but the internet is tubes. It's tubes.
It's tubes.
What are you talking about? What are you talking about, Ted?
It's tubes.
I have one quick question for you guys about how you guys are really marketing the show, because you've only been around for, I guess, 6 months, and I read this really interesting article about how you're using all of these social networking sites like MySpace, Friendster, you know, using YouTube for videos, Flickr, Frapper, and I just looked on your MySpace account. You have 22,000 friends. It's amazing that the ninja has so many friends. But maybe you could talk a little bit about how you really got the word out about the show, because there's been such a spike in its popularity so quickly.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, we've just, you know, believed in the people that watch us. And so, you know, I mean, we don't have a marketing budget. So it was just like, okay, well, like, how can we make us as friendly, you know, to the MySpace audience, to, you know, Frapper, to, you know, like all of those, you know, kind of Web 2.0-y sites that are out there that, you know, that really are putting the onus on the users and the you know, the people that are participating in the net culture. And so, you know, and like, people think that's fun, you know, like, oh, great, you know, I can add you as a friend. And, you know, like,
and when I write in a question, I know that they're answering real questions that people actually send in. And
yeah,
when they talk to us on MySpace, it's the actual guys who do that. So it's just like, you know, investing ourselves in the community.
You're number 7 on iTunes right now, which must be pretty gratifying. I hate to ask this question, but everybody wants to know, how many people do you estimate are seeing each episode?
Oh, we're like about 350,000 right now.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah. That's huge.
Yeah, it is. It's great. But, you know, and it's just two guys and a ninja and a wall, you know, in my little cramped apartment that I have to like huddle in, you know, with one room and an air conditioner. You know, it's like, it's just like a hovel. And
it's very much, if you saw the movie Hustle and Flow,
yeah,
it's a lot like shooting episodes are a lot like that, except we don't have Taryn Manning on the fan.
Most importantly, where do you buy your bandwidth?
Oh, you know, I heard an inside of the net about Libsyn, and so we went there. We're like, oh, all right, you know, you guys thought it was pretty cool.
It's worked for you.
Oh, absolutely. We started with Our Media. Like, that took us to about, you know, the 20,000 to 30,000 mark on FeedBurner. And then we just went from there. You know, we're definitely, you know, looking heavily at some of these revenue sharing sites like Rever and some of the other ones that are coming out online right now. You know, that definitely seems like the wave of the future. You know,
one of the things that's really exciting about this is it is completely unknown. I mean, nobody knows what's right, how to do it, and it's fun to be creating from scratch with nothing.
And that's where the power is for independent content creators, because, you know, no one knows. Yeah, no one knows about it.
You know more than anybody. Yeah,
big studios don't know about it, and they're going to take longer to get there. They're going to move more slowly because they're going to have to figure out all the facets of it. When just anybody with a camera and some compelling content to go after, they can create it immediately and put it out there. And that's where a lot of the excitement and the power and the energy for the online community comes from, is the fact that it's really in the hands of independent content creators right now.
Have you guys always been interested in the community online, or is that something you just sort of got into as you realized it was a great way to distribute your...
Kent is a huge geek.
Yeah.
I knew it. I knew it.
No, I've been online before before the web, really. I was online in 93 or something, and when I first saw the web, I was like, Gopher kicks butt so much, like more.
Gopher
than
kicks butt.
Yeah, like, wow. And I was like, oh, this will never replace Gopher, my friend. And then
you really are a geek.
Totally. And then when I saw it with pictures, I was like, oh, I get it now. But my first impulse was like, oh, please. You know, the hierarchy of data distribution of Gopher is so much better.
Was that in college? When you were into that, or
that was like late high school, and wow. Then like, you know, college. Like I went, like in, at my college, I was one of the first guys developing web pages, and you know, and all that sort of stuff. Like,
so it's really a perfect relationship between you and Doug, because you know this technology.
Oh yeah. And when video over RSS like kind of came to the fore, you know, in late October, I was like, oh my God, this is it, you know, and so all of my skill sets that I thought never would really all come to play like suddenly catalyzed into, oh, this is so perfect, you know, like this is totally the way.
It was like when I met Kent at Second City, he was just manipulating students to do short films for him. And he was doing
that was his goal.
No one, yeah, because he was. It was just like this sick Machiavellian world where no one was doing any digital shorts, really in our group. And he was just, you know, pulling people, yanking talent, and then just manipulating them to do his bidding.
Well,
and it kept telling him, guys, this is where it's going. This is the future of it. And, you know, and then, like, you know, a couple of years later, Scott Billups lists Kent in the front of his book as the future of digital filmmaking.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, and everybody begins to say, oh, right.
That guy, that weirdo. Yeah.
the weirdo kept asking me to take off my clothes and jump around like an idiot.
Wait. That sounds really bad.
So, are you trying to build? What are you trying to build? I mean, you've got another podcast. You've just launched Hope is Emo. What's the goal here?
You know, I don't know. I mean, like, definitely, if we were more Silicon Valley based, I think we would be like, you know, part of us has been like, oh, we should build a tech company, or like, you know, sort of like a go-to content creator. But at the same time, we're down here in LA, and so that means like a whole different sort of thing of, you know, utilize us as like the funny go-to writers and you know, people like that just are kind of, you know, creating this new media reality. And so I think we just really want to use what we're building, you know, not only as, you know, things that permeate the popular culture, but then also just use that as a platform to get on to bigger and bigger things while always knowing that, you know what, like, if you're not gonna give me what I want to do, you know, like if you're not gonna pay me to do that movie, I'm just gonna go walk down the street and, you know, put it on YouTube or Rever or something and get, you know, 1 million, 5 million, 8 million people like to watch it. And you're going to just be sitting there scratching your heads going, oh, we really could have had something there, you know, like, and so yeah. it's kind of like
there's a revenge element to this fantasy.
Yeah, no. I don't think it's like spiteful or cocky. It's just saying, the power is really in the hands of the content creators, and it's in the hands of the people who have the compelling stories and the interesting characters to put out there. And
hallelujah.
There's only so much manipulation that is available to the dollar. And that really depends on, you know, what the creator needs and what they need to get their job done. But the tools of production are so inexpensive these days. And that it's just putting so much back in the hands of the content creator.
Yeah, that, and then now distribution, since that distribution key puzzle has kind of fallen into place to some degree, it's just like, well, great, you know, what do we need you for? And, you know, like, you can't give us, like, you know, traditionally Hollywood gives you a horrible first deal, you know, and now it's just like, well, no, you can't do that anymore, you know, because I'll just walk down the street and I can do it without you and make, you know, millions of dollars literally without you. And so, you know, I think they're scared. They're trying to figure that out, and they don't know what that means. And, you know, it's a really interesting time at that intersection of Hollywood.
You know, when you talk about making millions of dollars, how are you guys going to do that? I'm more curious as well, just because I have my own podcast as well.
You sell DVDs, you know, I mean, if you sell 100,000 DVDs, you know, which is kind of a pittance amongst, you know, Hollywood, you know, that wouldn't be all that great. You know, it's a solid number, but like, but if you're three, you know, if you're a really small operation like us, you know, with, you know, two guys and you sell 100,000 DVDs, which is, you know, like, you know, a small fraction of what our audience is, you know, like, if, like overall, then you're making like, you know, $5 million or, you know, you're making millions and millions of dollars where, you know, and the split is much better than what Hollywood would be paying you for that first DVD.
And you're immediately in contact with your community. So you know what your community wants on a DVD, you know what your community wants out of your content, and you're really speaking to them because of the direct content and the direct connection. And I think that online users reward people who really represent them and really, you know, take the time to get to know their community.
I would agree. I would agree with that. Yeah.
And push back content at them that says, "Hey, you know what? I just heard what you said."
Right.
And you know, there's no nice reviewers online. I mean, I guess they're everywhere. There are always the BS reviews, but you know, you get a lot more honesty online.
Ooh,
you get people that say that sucks.
A little too much sometimes.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
But it really is to be celebrated and embraced because it's honesty. And if you look to it as a you know, not to be, you know, idealistic or whatever, but it's you know, there's a beauty and a truth and honesty that gets to the core of what art is about.
Well, it's absolutely what this is a revolution is about, is a conversation with your customers and hearing what they say. You know, I was struck when you talked about this, that this isn't the first time this has happened in Hollywood. Back in the 20s, Charlie Chaplin and Mary Pickford and Douglas Fairbanks got tired of being controlled by the movie studios, started their own movie studios, which became United Artists, of course.
Right.
But in this case, I mean, I think you have even more control. You control everything, the whole
right.
kit and caboodle.
Right, and that's it's
what every artist dreams of.
Yeah, it's more of a Lucille Ball thing where she had done, you know, 40 movies or 60 movies and was not becoming a star, and she was getting close to 40, and she just took her talent, her ability to connect with an audience, moved to a whole new medium, and controlled everything herself.
Yeah. It's what every artist dreams of. It's the goal of anybody who does this, is to have control of what they do.
Absolutely. And like I think what you're going to start seeing more and more of too is like the studios, especially on the TV front, and you know, and to a lesser extent the feature film front, like, you know, the audience, particularly the young male audience, is eroding, you know, real fast, going to gaming and the internet. And so I think, you know, you're going to start seeing more of like what happened in the 70s where, you know, the feature film industry had to reinvent itself because, like, you know, all of these old studio pictures weren't quite working. And so I think you're going to see that more with feature films and television where, like, you know, where people that have success on the net, like, you know, they're going to be given bigger, you know, studio backing because, like, well, these guys somehow know, you know, what's going on and you know, just trying to figure that stuff out.
Is that what you and Doug would like? I mean, would you like ultimately to be taken back into the fold and become kind of mainstream filmmakers?
We'd like to reach the largest number of people with our content, and it's for us it's more about, you know, how well the content satisfies our, you know, our artistic void. And so it's if many people embrace it, great. That's wonderful. We'd love to reach out to those people if we're really speaking to them. But it's more about, you know, us trying to be true to our artistic selves and create from that place of what really entertains us.
And where do you think Ask a Ninja will be in, say, a year down the road?
You know, I don't know. Like, it's
in a garbage can in the corner of Cleveland.
No, not the ninja. The show.
The show.
That's different. No, like right now, like, you know, we're being approached by, you know, the big three or big four content people, you know, and, you know, so we're looking at licensing deals with all those people, but at the heart and soul of it, like, we don't want to sell out our audience, and we don't want to, the offers are going to have to be, you know, like, obscene, you know, like, for us to really, you know, just phone it in. But like we love the people that, you know, that have invested in us, and we reinvest in them. And so, like, I think it just keeps growing and keeps on keeping on.
Yeah, I would say in a year from now, whether it's the Ninja or whether it's something new, Kent and I will be just putting out creative content. And the Ninja will hold up as long as there is an audience to bear that.
Mm-hmm. And how do you feel about all the people who have sort of copycat shows like Axe a Pirate or Ask a Chicken? Have you guys watched any of these?
Yeah, we have, you know, and they're great. You know, like, I think it's just the community saying, hey, this is great, you know, giving us a thumbs up. And
it's an homage.
Yeah, because the mashups that we receive are, you know, they're awesome, and they're great, you know, remixes of our material, and some of them have been great boosts for us. When Amanda from Rocket Boom, when she recut our first five episodes into an interview with her, we were like, great. That was a wonderful endorsement of our content. And when Radio Shack came out with a commercial that, you know, used a guy that was acting like our ninja in their commercial, we posted it on our site like it was a fan film, because
there's a turnaround, isn't it? The Radio Shack, yeah, making a fan film of it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but we turned it into a fan film because,
well, and that's our marketing too, honestly. You know, like, if someone takes the time to actually, you know, invest themselves enough to do a takeoff, you know, they link back to us, they get their 100, 300, 500, 1,000 friends or whatever to view it, and then, you know, it just increases the awareness of us. And, you know, like we're fine with what we're doing. That, you know, I mean, we're so guerrilla. Like, we use one camera angle. We use, and everything's just done in post, essentially. That it, you know, the only thing that's differentiating our podcast from all the other ones out there, including the ones that are knockoffs or whatever, is just our creativity. And so it's like, and you can't copy that, you know. Like,
and if you try and pretend it's something more, then you're fooling yourself, and you're going to fall into the fat cat syndrome. And
you're going to get killed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Tell us about Hope Azimo. How did that happen? Did she come to you? Did you approach her? Were you trying to grow your empire?
Yeah, like all of those things. Like, she saw us at a couple of the shorts played at the Comedy Cocktail, which is a LA comedy show, and she was at that show, Krista Flanagan from Mad TV, and so she sent a fan mail through MySpace saying, hey, I saw your stuff, it was really funny, and so, you know, we kind of grew a correspondence from that, and, you know, we'd seen her on Mad TV, and she's like a modern Mary Tyler Moore, if you're familiar with her work, where she can cry, and it's sad, but it's also really, really funny to watch her get emotional. And so, then I knew that this whole emo, the whole emo situation is so chock full of energy and, on the net.
And it's not all positive energy.
Yeah. There's like, you know, it's just real polarizing. It's just a big firestorm. And so, you know, and then, you know, we took that, kind of combined that, and then all three of us brainstormed what this character would be like. And, we tried to follow the rules that we set up from Ask a Ninja, which was, you know, single camera angle, Don't worry about the first one having all the answers. Let it grow, figure it out, you know. And so we just kind of slowly started, you know, like, and we didn't, like, you know, we prepared for success but expected failure. And, you know, fortunately for us, it was featured on YouTube that first week, and it's been viewed like 850,000 times.
Wow.
And, you know, and, you know, she...
And she's really into it. And she's like, and there, you know, she took a lot of time to find the character, and she's still exploring that herself. But the most amazing thing for us about it was the response online, just like how visceral the response was of the people, because it's just the downright hatred towards the emo culture, or the people that really were just like, yeah, that's great, it's just fun,
or that was me 10 years ago, or right. you know, like right. you know, so there, it's just been a really you know, the sense of humor is a little different, a little slower, a little but we're definitely trying to kind of infuse what, you know, the lessons that we've learned through Ask a Ninja into, you know, growing that podcast, and then, you know, in the future, being able to grow others, you know, as well, you know, kind of apply the same sort of marketing lessons and the...
once you solve all those problems, it's kind of and I've found this myself, it's a natural thing to say, oh, well, now I kind of know how to do this. I can
right.
plug other things in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you figured it out.
Right.
Any ideas of a third show coming in?
Sure. We've got lists of hundreds of ideas for it.
There's a hot girl tech reporter, and she... Oh, wait.
I think that's been done. I'm sorry.
Call me later. Call me later, Amber.
I'll call you. But you can't kill me. That's the only thing. keep the ninja away.
It is a chance. Right, could workshop stuff like crazy because it's so inexpensive to do.
Absolutely. Right.
And that is one thing, is that you can put a lot out there, and you can test a lot of things, and you can just explore ideas without a lot of cost attached to your risk.
Hello?
Oh. Hello?
They were just awed by the...
It was such a deep thought.
I was thinking, that's all.
Thank you, too.
Wow. Yeah.
So, we know you guys have to go back and shoot another episode. Can you let us know when the next episode should be out? Because I know you're not on really a regular schedule. It's kind of it's a little more sporadic.
Yeah, we're working on that. We try and stay as regular as we can.
But genius only strikes once in a while.
Yeah, the problem is I'm the editor, and like I'm a bad editor, meaning that like I just I'm a lazy editor, and then everything needs to be perfect in like, you know, my mind, and it's horrible. It's like it's worse than writer's block.
You don't have to apologize. I know exactly how you feel.
when the stars align and he finds his game, shooting the lights out.
Awesome.
It's really exciting. You guys have done such a great job.
Hey, thanks. We appreciate you guys taking the interest in us.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, thanks. So can you tell us maybe what I guess you can't tell us what the question is for the next episode, but a time frame of when it might be out?
Oh yeah.
I'm very anxious. Sorry.
It'll probably be soon. You know, we've got to get one out. I would say like the next day or two. I always like doing it right before big holidays. So, so tomorrow's the 4th.
Today's
of July,
the day,
so.
Baby.
So today's the day.
Get editing, Doug.
Kent's
the bad editor. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
so we should expect one soon.
But that one's about, we've got a couple summary ones coming up where that one's about ninternships, where, you know, how to be an intern with summer.
I would never thought you could get so much out of a ninja, but it's just amazing how much humor there is in there.
Well, it's great. It's great because our perspective is that everything that you know about ninjas has been a lie. And so, you know, so it's a great, we can, anything we say, you know, we don't have to worry about contradicting other things.
Right. And ultimately it's about point of view. We don't pretend like we're the first people to have, you know, ninja content. We're just the first people to actually have a real ninja.
On that note, since a ninja might come around at any moment, we should probably let you guys Oh, gosh. Don't let the ninja come out. We don't need to be killed, Leo. We have
I've been here the whole time.
Oh, no.
I knew we should have ended it when the opportunity came.
Oh, seriously.
Seriously, you should have. Uh-oh. If you look in the other room, your producer is dead.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, thanks so much, guys. This is really fun. And you guys do an awesome job. I'm a huge fan, as I know Leo is.
Absolutely.
And can't wait to see the next episode.
Absolutely.
Thanks very much, and good luck. You keep up the good work. It's really just inspiring to see people who love what they do getting to do it and succeeding at the same time. I think it's fantastic.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, guys.
So that's Doug Serene and Kent Nichols, the madmen behind Ask a Ninja, with a little cameo appearance from the ninja himself.
Now, I used to think maybe it was Kent, and now I'm thinking it's Douglas.
I think it's
Doug, don't know who the ninja is.
If you listen closely, Kent was laughing that while the ninja was talking. So I thought it was Kent, too, and I guess not. You know what? They both could do the voice.
I know. That's the problem. I don't know what's going on over there.
At least we survived the interview. It's really wonderful to see them get to do what they love to do. It's interesting also, and I'm starting to see this as we do more and more of these interviews. They have a very... specifically Hollywood focus, don't they? I mean, it's very different, say, from Andrew Barron, who has more of a New York focus. Where you're from and the cultural milieu you're working in really do inform how you do what you do.
Yeah, kind of like we have no studio in Canada, so we're out on the streets doing
right.
Command N.
Right. I think very much so. And I think Command N might be very, very kind of typically Canadian production. But even not just how it's produced, but also the vision behind it and the goals behind it. I mean, it sounds to me like Doug and Kent still want to be part of the Hollywood establishment. They don't see themselves as outcasts by any means.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, what you're hearing from a lot of people, whether it's a web 2.0 software site or a podcast, a lot of these people who are creating things online, a lot of the ambition for it comes out of the fact that they've worked in some type of traditional business environment and they were frustrated, and all of a sudden they have the web, which allows them to do all this and reach out to, you know, a huge audience without having kind of the corporate bureaucracy that you have a lot with, whether you're at a studio or in a business. So I think we all kind of share that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, certainly that's my influence is I want to do it myself. I don't want anybody else to own it ever again. And obviously, for a lot of us, just the chance to do that is really great.
I know. I was thinking when he was talking about how they were planning to make money with DVDs, that it's interesting and smart because the comedy of Ask a Ninja really lasts forever.
Right.
Where the rest of us doing all this tech news,
right,
thinking, that's not going to work so well.
Yeah, exactly. Right. No, that's exactly right. You know, I kind of surprised me. It's not an answer we get a lot. Because we're tech and we're timely.
Yeah, most of the time. But then again, if you think about it, I guess, you know, we have obvious advertisers who would come on board with Ask a Ninja. I mean, I don't know who advertised on a ninja podcast. I'm sure there's lots of people, but it's sort
Wilkinson
of a...
Wilkinson Blade it's sort of Swords, yeah.
<I don't know. laughs> Exactly. But yeah, they're lots of fun and they're so creative, and I hope they come out with even another project, because obviously they're just, you know, they're hilarious at the end of the day, and that's where I think a lot of the value is as well.
In the long run, that I think that's exactly it. You can talk about everything else, production value and distribution, but if you don't deliver something, whether it's content or humor or entertainment or something, people aren't going to watch. I love the fact that they embrace their audience, negative feedback as well as positive feedback. I think that's also kind of critical to the whole Web 2.0 culture.
Yeah, it really is. And I mean, if you think about the way that they've worked the show, all of their questions and a lot of that content is coming direct from the audience, and the way that they share their show on all these different web services, you know, MySpace, Friendster, everywhere, is that they're really leveraging that entire community. So as much as it's something that you could see on traditional television, the way of that they're marketing it, it is entirely online.
Yep.
And their audience is just, obviously 350,000 people is an enormous
Isn't
amount of
that
people.
Isn't great? It's wonderful
really
to hear
cool.
that success. Amber, it's been great talking to you. Enjoy the rest of your week off in Prince Edward Island in Charlottetown, and we'll see you next week for another episode of Inside the Net.
Thanks, Leah.